Hey y'all, it's V, the Tax Lien Strategist. I wanted to go ahead and upload this segment to get these notes off my desk. I haven't had a chance to really, I've researched this and read this a lot on this. And so, but this is what I've gathered from other sources and not from, well, from sources, respected sources, and not just from my takeaways as well as interviewing, you know, some developers who don't mind being open and forthright. I am going to say that this segment is dealing with the perks and the bonuses and the incentives that developers receive for building, quote unquote, affordable housing. And this is how this goes. I'll have another segment that talks about other things as it relates to this, but I wanted to get this one done so we could clear the desk. So I'm reading from a particular article, and then I'm going to come follow it with the next segment with my own assessment of it. Now, this comes from, the source is Wang and Balakandran. It was written in 2021. So most communities offer significant incentives to developers to offset the cost of providing affordable housing units. The most common incentive is the ability to build increased density. Another common incentive is to offer other zoning variances, such as reduction in site development standards, modification of architectural design requirements, and reduction in parking requirements. Other less commonly used incentives include waivers, reduction, or deferral of development and administrative fees and or financing fees, expedited processing, concessions on the size and cost of finishes of affordable units, tax relief abatement, and direct public subsidy. A 2021 study also identified other incentives, such as issuing certificates of affordable housing credits, which are transferable and can be sold, and technical assistance from the city. So just by this, you can see already where the burden is going to be on the tax, how much burden is going to be on the taxpayer for these developers to continue to offer what they consider affordable housing that, one, are not affordable. We're going to also talk about what happens when you can't fill these units with people with when people who qualify for affordable housing are turned down. We're going to deal with that also. So it says that a subset of 258 programs provided detailed information about outcomes. These programs report creating a total of about 110,000 affordable units, including 70,000 affordable rental units, 31,000 for sale units, and 9,000 units with tenure unknown. In addition, 123 of the programs surveyed tracked and reported fees collected through their inclusionary housing programs, including linkage impact fee programs. In total, this subset of inclusionary programs has collected at least $1.76 billion in fees. Now, I have a list of the collection of the resources that will show all this information. If anybody wants to get a copy of this, go to inclusionaryhousing.org and you will find this. I'm trying to see where, what you could Google on that site. But in Google Inclusionary Housing on their site and see if some of this comes up. Okay, so they got all these different programs. They have, but here's some key takeaways to all of it, because I'm not going to go over the whole article. You can read it for yourself. More cities are considering adopting inclusionary housing policies to reduce affordable housing shortages and foster inclusive communities. However, too little is known about the characteristics and trends of this affordable housing tool. Consequently, policymakers
city staff and stakeholders are at risk of reinventing the wheel as they design, modify, and implement inclusionary housing policies. So a national survey conducted between 2018 and 2019 by Grounded Solutions Network addressed some gaps in knowledge on inclusionary housing policies. This survey was the most comprehensive investigation of inclusionary housing in the United States to date. So it identifies over 1,000 inclusionary housing programs located in 31 states and the District of Columbia at the end of 2019. Now, inclusionary, how prevalent are inclusionary housing programs in the United States? What are the program design patterns? And what is the scale of production? Building on our earlier work, it says, Grounded Solutions Network embarked on a large-scale data collection effort between 2018 and 19 to study inclusionary housing programs in local jurisdictions. And so the study yielded the report, Inclusionary Housing in the United States, that, again, it can be found on Inclusionary Housing website, Grounded Solutions Network. It talks about a lot of things. A lot has to do with how, you know, the different ways that some of the bonuses, some of the things that the developers can use, which I read somewhere that it amounts to, because it ends up going back to the public. In addition, 123 of the programs surveyed tracked and reported the fees collected through their inclusionary housing programs of at least $1.6 billion in fees. And so, you know, that one goes back to the tax payer. So be careful what you're calling a burden to the tax rolls. Be careful who you're calling welfare queens and kings out here. Be careful. Just because people don't look as if they're your definition of what someone or how someone looks doesn't mean that you have to fall for the okey-doke. And before I get off of this one, we're going to talk about these incentives real quick. These incentives are sometimes, some people criticize these incentives as giveaways to developers. Some people point out that incentives generally come at a real cost to the public sector. If inclusionary housing requirements are modest enough to be absorbed by land prices, then any incentives merely move the cost from the landowners back to the public. Incentives such as tax abatements, free waivers, reduced revenues available to jurisdictions, just as cash subsidies to development projects would. Even planning incentives such as density bonuses. I want you all to look at density bonuses and see what happens when developers receive density bonuses. They receive bonuses, density bonuses, if they're able to squeeze a few more units in their projects and have those units only to be considered as for affordable housing. Sometimes developers receive perks just by taking away from some units, or let's say taking away from parking to add more units. So when you look at these developments, this new crap that's coming up in urban areas and neighborhoods, and you see the layout, understand it is not without good reason. There's a reason for not having a lot of parking in some of these units. And I'm sure density bonuses and those kind of things, in other words, they're being paid to not allow so much parking on this stuff that's like, looks like, you know, like where everything looks the same. But it is the most common form of incentive used by inclusionary housing programs. So developers are allowed to build more housing units on a site if some units are set aside for affordable housing. But here's the thing. If people don't want affordable housing in their neighborhoods, because we get closer and closer out of the urban areas with some of these, and that's why they're so adamant about taking what's already in the neighborhood. If you wonder why they won't move away from the neighborhood with affordable housing, while they're more interested in going to foreclosure auction and getting those properties in foreclosure because they're already in the urban areas. That's why they're making the garage door smaller. That's why they're making the front unit smaller, or the unit smaller. That's why you're able to get four doors on a 50 by 100 foot lot when just years ago you were not. It is our government giving into developers and the bonuses and the perks and the incentives that they're giving them and allowed. So we're giving people our double and triple and quadruple dipping, although on the backs of the taxpayer, the people who they say can afford to live here. So let's build affordable housing for them over here, and let's make this their problem because it's over here. Let's say that there's a shortage of affordable housing, but let's still continue to deny them housing. Yeah, I need you to think. I need people to think out there. All right. Until the next segment, I'll talk to y'all soon.